Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, that had to be the longest 30 seconds of your life right there. But I couldn't help myself. We've got to send the message out. I know the folks here are awake, but it's an emergency. This is an SOS going out to all of our fellow patriots and all of those who are looking around wondering what happened to the world around them and the America they used to know. What's happened? What the hell has happened to us? Well, what has happened to us is what's been planned for a very long time. You know, we had a great conversation going last night, and I felt kind of guilty because I didn't want to take over Michael's show, and I know he was recuperating. But we have to show deference or respect to one another. And I didn't want to feel like I was just stepping over, taking over his show. One of the conversations we were having was Oz, one of our frequent guests and a member at Patriot Families, was asking about debate, wondering about a good book to read so that he could be more proficient at debating, something with logic and reason. Because this is something that's not taught in schools these days. We're not taught. I know I certainly was not taught growing up in the public schools the idea of critical thinking. We weren't taught to think critically. And the reason you're not taught to think critically public school is because when you think critically, you question everything. And you question everything to the point of resolution. You have to resolve this question. I want to know the truth. I don't want someone else's opinion of it necessarily. And that's one of the things about human beings, that we necessarily have to feel like we've discovered the truth all on our own. And, of course, we have Robert on the phone. If you're hearing a little background noise, he's skydiving with his dog again.
No, I'm not.
Oh. But, you know, I think that might actually be one of those Chinese cordless phones from Walmart. And the FBI is tapping his line. I'm certain of it.
That's probably true.
Well, I mean, that's what happens when you're a dissident Jew, Robert.
A
dissident Jew.
Oh, now I'm a dissident Jew?
Well, absolutely. You're railing against the norm. You know, you're not fitting into the flock or the foal anywhere there. You're kind of out on your own.
I'm not only am I a man without a country, I'm a man without my religion. Is it their truth?
Well, it is the truth, and you know, I wrote and I'm gonna, as much as possible, kind of toot my own horn tonight, because I do feel a sense of vindication or justification. Robert, are you okay?
I'm fine. Just go ahead and toot, man.
Okay. Well, you kind of sound like you're cutting in and out. I didn't know. I thought maybe you might have fallen.
No.
Okay. You got outriggers on your bar stool?
Out what?
Outriggers. What? You know, man, like they use on the Polynesian bugs. Come on, man. You got to.
No,
man,
you're featuring me again.
You got to keep up pace here, Robert.
I have. Believe me, I have. I'm so angry right now. I'll give you a classic example. I don't mean to tip my own horn, okay?
No, you go right ahead, sir.
I'll give you a classic example. Now, where since you brought up Polynesian, I'll give you a classic example. She was afraid to become a citizen of the United States because she has property in Tonga, right, that her father left her.
Right.
And if...
Well, I don't blame her for being afraid then.
Yeah, but hear me out.
Okay.
So then they changed the rule that even now that you become a citizen of the United States, you can still have your father's property. Now, I explained to her what was going on here, that the government, my house is not, I'm a homeowner, but it's really owned by the government. So here's a girl who's not a citizen of the United States yet, who has more common sense than you know what to do with.
Well, that's because she wasn't indoctrinated into this system for her entire life.
But you want to hear her answer? This is her answer. Her answer was, oh, I get it. So the reason why they want me to become a citizen of the United States is so the government can have my property too.
Yes, they can have claim to her damn property. And I was worried that, you know, when you told her you were a homeowner, she might think you like boys or something.
But. Oh, God, you are. Oh, ooh.
I'm on fire tonight, man.
Oh, man, you're hot. So you understand why I'm hot too?
Absolutely. You know, I've got to say, Robert, that I am very much looking forward to coming down and drinking a cold beer with you towards the end of May.
Oh, absolutely. I am too.
We will be down that way. We're going to be in Cape Coral, and I will make it my absolute mission. To stop off and meet Robert and maybe the Polynesian lady as well. Nothing more.
But she gets it. It's just like we were a Largo run, right? Gas. $3.66 a gallon.
Well, see, it's gone down. That's Obama is looking out for you. Like gas prices have gone down because he wants you to vote for him, Robert.
I know that. I said, don't look that. So she goes, do you think if I was a citizen of the United States after what you've been telling me since I've met you, I would vote?
Well, that is the hope, you know. But I think what happens is what you should tell her, Robert, is that should she become a citizen, she'll only get one vote. But being a non-citizen, she might have two or three votes.
Now, why do you say that?
Well, because she can vote under several different names. You know, when you're not a citizen, they allow that kind of thing, especially if you're voting Democrat. I mean, the Democrats, let's face it, especially in the Chicago area, Democrats in Illinois are so devoted that not even death can keep them from voting in an election.
Right.
That's absolutely true.
Ron, it's just so amazing. It's just like, you know, here down in Florida, I don't know how it is up in Atlanta, but people are just driving like nothing's happening.
Well, people are that way everywhere. And, you know, I was thinking about that actually on my way home today. I had to work today, and then my granddaughter had her little fourth birthday party. And I was driving home, and I'm just looking around at all the people. And the thought is occurring to me that they just don't have a damned clue of the bigger picture. They really don't. And that's why I played that clip when I opened the show. It's loud and obnoxious. Not music that I tend to listen to with any frequency, but was a clip from Rage Against the Machine, and they're just screaming, wake up. Wake up.
Well, I saw an article or email someone, email me an article about Ron Paul. And from what I read from the article, it stated that he locked up a lot of delegates to stop our so-called presumptive nominee to become the presumptive nominee.
And you won't read about it or you won't hear about it on the mainstream media. They pretended all along that he doesn't exist, but now they're really pretending he doesn't exist. But they have a problem. I mean, honest to God, they've got a problem. And the problem is that now that Santorum's dropped out and Gingrich is sure to drop out, Romney still doesn't have 1,144 delegates by any stretch of the imagination.
Right.
And they thought for certain that when Santorum dropped out, Romney would wrap up Colorado, and that didn't happen. It went to Ron Paul.
Right.
So they're reeling. Of course, they're not going to let that show. You don't show all your cards, and you play it close to the vest. So, of course, he's going to go on and attack Obama, which is fine. That's perfect. Let that debate happen between Obama and Romney, the fight of which one is more progressive, because that's actually the fight they're having. If you watch and listen to the ads and what they're saying about one another back and forth, it's a game of one-upsmanship that has no basis in reality at all, except for, you know, the truth is that what the arrows they're slinging back and forth at each other, you know, Obama's going, well, he's more liberal progressive than I am. He's the one that gave us the idea for health care. And Romney's throwing back at him, oh, God, he's a progressive. Look, they're both progressives. And nobody's fooled.
Exactly. But
only those people that want to be fooled are fooled by Romney.
Exactly.
Plain and simple.
But I'm telling you.
No, I'm just saying, you know, that the people get what they deserve.
When you listen to Romney to Iran, I mean, it's like he's like a continuous what we call statistics. There's continuous variables and dichotomous variables.
He's an enigma.
He's a dichotomous variable.
He's a weather vane. Whatever way the frickin' wind is blowing today, whatever audience that he's speaking to, what he thinks they want to hear is what he's going to tell them.
So, but this is what I can't really stand. This is one thing I can't stand. He says this constant he starts it in the beginning of the paragraph or at the end of his paragraph. And if you listen close to you'll when you start listening to his stump speeches, you'll understand what I'm talking about. And what he does, he goes, and by the way, we are all Americans.
Well, right. And the thing is, I agree with that. And I don't know if you hung out long enough last night during Michael's show. I put a link in the chat room to a documentary.
I'm losing you.
You there?
Yeah, no, I'm here.
Okay. You weren't losing me. We were losing you.
Oh, man, it's my phone.
I know. I told you. It sounds like you're skydiving with the dog.
I wish I was at this point. Let me find a closer area then. How does this sound? Maybe it is my phone. Hold on one second.
You got that thing at Walmart, didn't you?
Yeah.
You're busted, man.
I'm busted. Hold on one second, Ron. Hold on.
Sure.
Hold on. Let me try this one. Is this better?
That sounds better. It sounds like
I don't know if I bought this at Walmart either, but it's a lab phone, so.
Well, it's not near as much static, so it does sound like you're in the bathtub, a little bit of reverb, but we're okay.
You're really hot tonight, man.
Sorry.
You're PO'd.
Well, I'm not really PO'd.
No, we're just smart.
Now, see, leave it to Yola. Yola's come in the chat and said, I have a lot of static, and Robert sounds fine.
Thank you, Yola. So it could
be sure. Blame it on the white guy. I see. Thanks, yo. It's this damn Skype is what it is.
It's a Skype camera. That's what it is. So you're on Skype right now so everybody can see you?
No, nobody can see me. I could turn on my cam, but I don't think that anybody has that that ability. I've looked at that on Blog Talk and can't figure out how to do that.
It's a Skype. It's you.
Well, now the Skype I've noticed.
It's all your fault, Rob.
Hey, you know what? I got big shoulders. I can handle it. I've noticed that the Skype tends to cause kind of a warbly sound.
That's the same type of noise I heard when Brian was on Friday and I got cut off.
The static.
Same sound.
The static that I hear in my headset, and I don't mean this in a, I'm not trying to target you, Robert. But
I can't wait to hear this one.
The only time that I pick up that background static is when you call in. It may just be something in the connection between Florida and here.
In Atlanta.
Yeah.
Are you on Verizon?
It may be the Zionists trying to jam our signal.
I wouldn't doubt it.
We just never know. But going back to what I was saying about last night, I had put up a link in the chat room to a debate. Actually, it's a documentary. And it Yola said she can't hear what I hear, and Bill said neither can his wife. That's called selective hearing. It comes with years of marriage. But Oz was talking about debate. And so I put up a link to a documentary, and the name of the documentary is Collision, the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you're familiar with it or not.
I wanted to see it.
Christopher Hitchens, mm-hmm. who was the leading intellectual of his time, who has since passed away.
Right.
And Pastor Douglas Wilson. And they were having this debate. Wow, that's fantastic. And anyway, they were having this debate, and I hope that static's not coming across for everyone else. But they had this debate based on Hitchens' book, Is Christianity Good for the World? And, of course, I wanted to give Oz an insight into the methodology of debate and how you go about having a debate, because most of what we do in everyday life is not a debate, it's an argument.
Ooh.
And arguing and debating are two totally different things. And what I found fascinating, I've always wanted to watch that documentary, and it's about an hour and a half long. And two very likable guys, Hitchens and Wilson both.
Hello.
Robert, are you on your cell phone? It almost sounds like you're in the car in a rainstorm now.
No, I'm not on my cell phone.
It sounds great when you're speaking. It's when you're silent that we pick up all the static, or I'm picking it up.
Maybe there's...
So you're just going to have to ramble and keep talking, you know?
All right.
I do that all the time.
I want to hear what you were going to say about the two debaters.
So anyway, I wanted to give Oz an example of, the proper debate forum, and Hitchens didn't didn't consider himself so much an atheist as he did an anti-theist. And one of the overriding things that came out for me, at least in watching the exchange between these two, and they actually became very good friends. They really liked one another quite a bit. Is that if you watch Hitchens, if you listen to him, everything that he posits on the idea of the existence of God is a negative. And a negative in the idea or in the ideology of because if we accept there is a God and God created everything, then God created evil and sickness and disease, and everything that's wrong with the world is God's fault. That's the ideology that Hitchens approaches it from. And the one thing I was disappointed is that Wilson never called him out on that. He never stopped and said, "Well, hold on a moment. Your premise is faulty, and here's why. You presuppose that all the troubles that befall mankind are created because of God, and you completely remove the responsibility of man, the individual, from the picture." And this is the exact same thing that all the atheists and all the communists do when spouting their ideology or their philosophy. It's never the fault of an individual. There's no individual responsibility. It's just this hierarchy that was set up by this evil capitalism that somehow this mythical creature, and it has nothing to do with interaction and normal human behavior. And you can't have it that way.
No.
Because mankind, each of us is responsible for our actions. And Hitchens was trying to float the balloon idea that with Christianity, if you believe in God, you know, Christ died to absolve you of all your sins, so you have no responsibility. He called it vicarious redemption. Well, that's nonsense, because every Christian knows that there's no such thing as vicarious redemption. God has forgiven you of your sin, even foreknowing that you're going to commit it. Before you know that you've committed the sin, he's already forgiven you. But it still requires acceptance on your part and a willingness to strive towards perfection. And I don't know why he never called him out on that.
I don't know why either. But to give you an example, my chiropractor, God forgive him, every time I go in for an adjustment, he calls me an Obama traitor, right? Because I was sitting around for Congress. But he goes, "You know you're a head and closet Obama supporter. Why don't you come out and admit it?" So I got so fed up with him. I know he was joking, but I had to come back for something. So you know what I did, Ron? I just said, "I'm so in love with you."
What you need to do, Robert, is the day before your session with your chiropractor,
Yeah. You
need to go to a Mexican restaurant and eat all the refried beans and drink as much cheap beer as you possibly can. And then when he contorts your back around and you escape some flatulence, you say, "Oh, God, forgive me. I'm sorry. Did I do that?"
You're funny, Ron. Oh, man. The more I think about it, you know, after listening to Michael's show, and he's had enough. Everybody's had enough. We've had enough.
Well, we are fast approaching that point, but not yet. You know, we've got to wait until the world collapses around our ears before we actually put teeth into what we say.
But in my mind, it has collapsed, Ron, because we're just like Greece. And to me, in my opinion, that always thought that was the quote foundation of it all. You know.
Well, you have to look at, I think you have to look at the middle class or the working class Americans. And when I say that, I mean the 50 some odd percent that actually pay income taxes. At the end of the year, they're net taxpayers. And from that 53%, you've got to extract from that group the net tax consumers. That would be, you know, government employees and of any stripe. So really, you're looking at the 18% of Americans that are footing the bill for the rest.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to recognize that they are like a wash rag.
Yeah.
And the power elites are wringing them out like a washcloth to squeeze every single drop out of them that they can possibly get. They already have the poor, those folks that don't pay any taxes, that are on government subsidies. They have them under complete and total control. They have them completely dependent on the drug that is government.
Explain to the room, explain to America, Ron, what this new gig is. I don't understand it yet, so therefore I don't have a right to talk about it.
Well, what do you mean, the new gig?
Well, there's a new gig that government is classifying now, that 75, anybody who's making 75 grand a year is going to be
evil.
Really, it's going to be really taxed even more.
Well, you understand that the threshold right now for paying individual income tax is around $50,000.
Exactly.
Okay. So anything above that is rich, and hell, we'll give a little gap. We'll say 75. Anyone making any wage earner making $75,000 a year or more is just purely evil. They're greedy bastards, and we need to put them in their place.
That's what that was. But I thought that was my interpretation, but I wasn't quite certain.
You know, it's like back in the day on the plantation during slavery, when you had one uppity slave that would get all the rest of them stirred up. Well, you got to put that guy in his place and teach the rest of them a lesson, and that's exactly what's going on right now.
Man, you're doing a good job. I must admit, you got to give credit where credit's due, Ron. I mean,
well, Robert, it's purely psychology.
I know it's purely psychology, but man, where do they? I know you had that clip that you put on the show about psychology, but I mean psychologists. Really didn't train people to be that evil. If they did, I didn't realize it. I mean, if this is all psychological warfare, I mean, I could.
Well, and it is. It purely is. I mean, what is psychology? Explain psychology.
I know, but my main concern is how they learn these tactics. My main concern of human beings. Well,
history,
I know
trial
that.
And error. Yeah, trial and error throughout history. It's pattern behavior.
I mean, they just like concentrated. They just like stay up all night long thinking how to screw America.
There's been so many studies done. It's ridiculous. You could get a group of 100 students together from any college anywhere in the United States and put them into a blind study where you give them some sort of stimulus, some sort of stimuli, either positive or negative, from your own point of view, positive or negative.
Right.
So let's say it's a negative stimuli. Well, statistically, and you should know this, a finite percentage are going to respond in a positive manner.
Right.
To negative stimulus. The majority are going to respond in a negative manner. And so you study their reactions. And that's all that's been done throughout history, is you have a problem, reaction, solution. And government and through advertising, Bernays was a genius. Hitler did this. They create a problem, or at the very least, the appearance of a problem.
Mm.
Then they await the public reaction so that they can bring in their solution that they was the agenda all along.
I tell you, they're good tactics because, I swear to God, I mean, I don't stay up all night thinking bad things about the people, you know?
And you don't have to. You really don't have to. You can. It's like reverse engineering. You have a goal in mind, and you look at the goal and say, "Okay, how can we implement our plan so that we achieve our goal?" Well, we could force everyone to do it. We could just come out with brute force and force everyone to do it.
Right.
But that's not going to be very pretty, and it's going to cost us dearly. So the best method is to create a problem. We will begin a program where we use advertising and slogans, catchphrases, that people will pick up on quickly, very short catchphrases, and you start advertising this problem. It may be a problem that people don't even recognize, like climate change, for instance.
Mm.
And so you float this idea and you tell the lie often enough and, you know, there's that small group again. There's that statistical group that anytime they hear of a problem, they don't care whether it's real or imagined. Oh, my God, we have to do something. And they're going to become the activists. And once you've got the activists, now the problem begins to grow, even though the problem is make-believe. It's all perception.
Mm.
And sooner than later, the problem becomes viable. And the public has a reaction. Now, there's always going to be the naysayers like myself and Mr. Bill Strong and Mr. Michael Magic who are going to push back the other way. Well, this creates a divide. This creates a divide in society, and that's exactly what you want. Because you want the people to take sides, for and against, pro and con. Now that we've established the playing field, the problem itself gets lost in the shuffle, and the government comes in to provide a solution that is equitable for both sides.
Mm.
A compromise, if you will. And that's what it's all about.
Yep. You did that pretty good, Ron. I had to give you an A+.
Well, that's truly the formula that they've been operating on for 80 plus years.
Do you know where my review, my professor gave us a review for our third exam? I know I'm in hot water. I'm in terrible bad shape. Guess what university the review is from? Just take one guess.
Berkeley.
Wrong. Harvard.
Harvard. Well, then all you have to do is get a picture of you wearing your yarmulke and you'll be fine.
I know I'm in hot water. Just hope I make it tomorrow, Ron.
Just make sure that when they snap the photo, you're not eating a ham sandwich.
That's it. That's question number 52 on the exam.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, man. I have to tell you that joke when you get down here. I can't tell it on the air.
Oh, it's that good, huh?
Yellow wouldn't speak to me anymore if I told this on the air.
Well, we don't want to do that.
No.
But to kind of circle back where I was talking about kind of tooting my own horn, in that video with Hitchens and Wilson. Here is a guy in Pastor Doug Wilson who is very much an intellectual and also a Christian. And there's a scene where he and Hitchens are getting into a philosophical debate about the Olivet Discourse. And Hitchens says that Christ wasn't a very good prophet because the world didn't come to an end within a generation, as he told his disciples. And Wilson very quickly corrects him, and he says, well, he never said that the world was coming to an end. He said what he told them, and he quoted from Isaiah when he spoke about the moon and the sun and the stars. And Wilson pointed out to him that if you go back through Scripture and you read that same warning, that dire warning, and then you read what transpired after that dire warning, in every instance, it was a military destruction of the state. And I thought that was very critical, and he's absolutely correct, because this is the same thing that I found. And so what he explained to Hitchens was that after the Olivet Discourse, Christ's prophecy was fulfilled in 70 AD with the destruction of Jerusalem and Judea at the hands of the Romans, which was a military destruction, which was in keeping with the tradition of the Jewish writing in the Torah, which is what Christ was expressing to them in the Olivet Discourse. So it happened exactly as Christ said it would within a generation. And Hitchens was taken aback. He said, well, I've never heard that argument before. Well, that's because you've been talking to people who got it wrong. He also talked about the Good Samaritan. And Wilson explained to him that the Good Samaritan was not simply a story about doing good. It was actually a story about racism. And that blew Hitchens away. Oh. And Wilson explained to him that at the time, a Samaritan was looked down upon as a lesser human being, much like the blacks were in the times of slavery in the United States.
Wow.
So it had more to do with ethnicity. It had more to do with racism than it did to do with just being good. It wasn't a matter of just being good. It was who the individual was being good to. You know, it was a Samaritan that was doing this, and these people were supposed to be the scum of the earth. And he actually gave a kind of a his own parable about, you know, he said it would be like a white guy being laying in the ditch all beaten to hell, and the pastor of the Methodist church walked past him, and the pastor of the Baptist church walked past him, and the police chief and the mayor, who were all white, walked past him, and here comes this lowly black man, and he comes along and he helps him. And he said, well, gee, I didn't know he had it in him. You know, that's not the way we look at those people. We think of them differently than being a good Samaritan. How can you have a good Samaritan? There are no good Samaritans. It was ethnic. It was racial.
I never knew that.
Well, neither did Hitchens. He was floored. He was speechless. He looked at him, blinking his eyes, and he said, I've never heard that argument before.
Mm.
He didn't know how to respond. He didn't know how to answer it.
That's why the police waved me off when I said, you guys need any help? They said, nah, get that out of here. Come on. God. Now I understand.
Oh man, you're tying it on yourself there, Mr. Rob.
Oh no, man. But it's just how everybody acts. You know, it's falling into place. It's just how everybody acts around you. I was trying to come up with a joke of how you define as a real socialist, and the only one I can come up with is that you define a socialist when you go in the grocery store and they just get their carts and they just run right into you and they know what they're doing.
I mean, oh, sure. You know, it was funny. I had a customer come in today. I had to work, and I was working at one of our other locations, one of our other stores, so it's not a store that I'm normally at. And a young lady came in, and she was picking up her car. And the guy that I was working with, Ken, you know, he took the invoice, and he said, I just need you to sign right there. And she stopped, and she said out loud, who am I today? Am I my mother or am I me?
Oh, my God.
And Ken looked at her and he said, well, you can be whoever you want to be. That's what makes this country great. And I looked at both of them and I thought, you've got to be shitting me. But in all honesty, he was speaking the truth. That's what he really felt. And I think that's the way most Americans feel, a lot of them. You can be anyone you want to be. You don't have to be yourself. You don't have to be honest. You don't have to be responsible. You can be anybody you want to be. You can go out and put on a little pink tutu and run around chasing boys instead of girls.
That's what I mean. That's how I see. That's how I see human behavior. But that's how you see who these socialists really are. I mean,
And you see it echoed in our government. There's no accountability. Is in and of itself the problem. There is no accountability. It's nobody's fault. Nobody's responsible. Or it's the other guy's fault. It's always going to be his fault. And it's not my fault.
Man. It's just too much. It's too much. I'm trying to have an upper chin and trying to keep cool. But Ron is getting harder every day.
Look, the way this stuff's going, you're going to need more chins than a Chinese phone book, okay?
You know, I'm breaking. And I was thinking to myself, you know, too, last night, after I talked to y'all, I was saying, why am I doing this stuff for? Why am I going to graduate school for? If I'm going to go to graduate school and become a biostatistician, then I will be under the government's regime. Why would I want to do this?
You'll be our inside man. little 007 there.
Why?
You'll be our Roger Moore.
But that's how I felt. I mean,
maybe we can get Frank to play the part of Q. You know? Robert, I believe I've tickled your funny bone.
Oh, my God. You know, I was just like, for almost 48 hours watching us become Greece, I was saying the mourner's cottage for him.
Well, and you know, the sad thing is there's nary a word on television. Not that I've watched any television in the last 3 or 4 days, but, you know, the mainstream media is pretending like none of this exists.
Oh, right.
You know, everything's great. I work with a guy. I'm not kidding. He makes me, every day, I want to grab him by the ears and beat his head against a brick wall.
Wow.
He comes in and he is the perfect slave.
The perfect what episode?
He's the perfect slave.
Oh, wow.
He went to business school. He majored in economics. He has the attention span of a five-year-old. And he listens to Disney music 24/7. He has it on his iPhone. And one of the songs that plays, aside from Cruella de Vil, which drives me nuts, is the one following the leader. And I'm like, you know, that's who you are, Alan. That's his whole identity, is following the leader, going along to get along, not rocking the boat. I'm like, you know, you would, he's the guy, if he was born Jewish and he was in Nazi Germany in World War II, he would be holding the door of the oven and helping them load his relatives in. I mean, that's the mentality of these people, though. I'm serious. My God, what the hell is wrong with you?
And he got, he has a BA in economics?
Yeah, and there is not a light bulb in the room. I mean, his attic is dark, Jack, I'm telling you.
So,
and you try to have a conversation with this guy. And a 30-second yes or no answer turns into a 15-minute dissertation that makes absolutely no sense to anyone but him.
He's a know-it-all.
But he doesn't know it all.
He knows
he doesn't know it all. And I'd like to think one of the reasons he knows he doesn't know it all is because he has to work with me.
Wow.
And I don't take any of that crap for an answer. I put him right on the spot. You know, that kind of junk just doesn't fly with me. And I'm like, you're an idiot.
He gives me this
blank stare and blinks his eyes.
I mean, he's got a neurological problem, Ron, but most likely. Sounds
well,
like
I know
anyway.
He does. He has a degree.
Besides that.
No offense, Robert.
No.
But he really does. I mean, the guy has got a total dysfunction.
There's something missing.
Yeah, I mean, there's some wires crossed up there somewhere. And how in God's name he's not a leftist progressive is beyond me. He claims to be a Christian, but he's a little bit confused over that. And he claims to be a conservative, and he's desperately confused over that. But, I mean, God bless him. The guy's trying, but I think the only reason he wants to be a conservative is because all the people that are around him are conservative.
He's one of them.
He just wants to fit in.
He wants to fit in, but he can't.
And see, I'm the opposite. I could give a damn about fitting in, okay? And, you know, I've got my opinion, and everybody else is wrong. I hate to be like that, and I'll entertain the debate and the conversation. I don't mind doing that. But these people that just accept things, as a given because they were told... There's a great example, you know, Penn and Teller, and I don't have a tremendous amount of respect for Penn and Teller, but they did a great survey where they were at some tree hugger festival out in California, and they had clipboards with petitions to ban dihydrogen monoxide.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for those of you that don't know what dihydrogen monoxide is, that's a really fancy way of saying water. And they had people in droves signing up to ban dihydrogen monoxide. They said it was, and they didn't tell any lies. They said it was the leading cause of death and drownings. Yep. The leading cause of death and drownings. It was highly toxic, that it, in large quantities, it was toxic, that it was an industrial strength solvent, and it's even found, believe it or not, in baby formula.
Hmm.
Okay, and they had these people just stumbling over themselves to sign the petition to ban it. And of course, without it, we die. It's water.
Wow.
That's the mentality that we're up against. aside from the folks that know exactly what it is they're doing.
Yeah,
you've got that segment of society that they're lemmings for all intents and purposes.
Oh man, I mean, it's like they had the same rhetoric with in their conversations. You could just hear it. You can sense that they're liberal. You can sense that they're just. What I'm trying to figure out, Ron, is that's why I never fit in basically, because I thought I was crazy all my life, and basically I really wasn't.
Well, you know, and in all honesty, I can actually relate to that, Robert. You know, I was always the guy that stood out, the fifth wheel, so to speak, growing up, because I didn't conform to what everyone else was doing. You know, I'm looking around and I'm thinking to myself, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to be an idiot to go along. Why would you do that? No, that's not right. And everybody just happily skips down the trail. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Can't do that. I wasn't brought up in the church, and you know, my grandparents and my mother and father, you know, they weren't like beating me with the Bible and scripture. I mean, it was something that just never even got spoken of. But still, I could look around and see what wasn't right. I knew what was right and what was wrong.
Well, yeah.
And you know, that was one of the things that Hitchens argued, that our sense of right and wrong is innate. It's inherent. And so he believes that because that sense of right and wrong is inherent, then it's just a product of evolution and not something that comes from God, which I thought was very interesting, because that kind of actually is a self-defeating argument when you really think about it. I see we've got Mr. Dean Shook with us again tonight. I want to welcome Dean to the chat room. And, of course, he's welcome to call in. And Dean, you might have sent me another email. I have not had time to check my email tonight. I do apologize. I see we've got Oz in the chat room as well, and I'm wondering if Oz got to watch the documentary, and if he found anything in there to help him with his quest for debate. You know, I think it's really important that we have debate. I think it's important that we have the conversation.
You know, when you say the word inherent, it almost sounds like analogous to enlightenment, entitlement.
No, not entitlement. What Hitchens was talking about is that our moral sense of right and wrong, okay, is innate. It's inherent. We have it from birth. We know the difference between right and wrong.
I
would agree with him. We do.
But when using the word entitlement, when someone thinks they're entitled to something, whether they're right or wrong, you know what I'm saying? I mean, it's just all these people think that they're entitled to. Well, like you said before, they're entitled to what you have. They're entitled to what to everybody in this chat room. They want it. They just want it.
Well, and see, that's one of the things that Hitchens argued, that you know, one of the commandments, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor or thy neighbor's goods. And he said, you know, coveting your neighbor's goods is a perfectly healthy, legitimate thing.
Hmm.
And I think where he falls short there is the definition of covet. It's one thing to admire your neighbor's achievements and want to emulate them. It's another thing entirely to covet what your neighbor has and become jealous and envious and lead it, and allow that envy and jealousy to lead you to sin. That's something totally different. And I'm going to take just a short break. And so, Robert, I'm going to put you on mute for a moment and see the static is gone completely. And I'm going to play a little song. And I hope you guys enjoy this. This one really brings a lot of peace for myself, at least. So I hope you guys enjoy the song, and we'll be back in about 4 minutes.
Thank you.
All right, guys, we're back. Sorry that you could pick me up talking to my wife in the background there. I was just letting her know that they got home pretty early, not long after I did, probably about an hour, not even an hour, about a half an hour. But I didn't cuss, so don't worry. If I cuss, it'll be on air, I promise. You won't miss it. Oz and I were chatting in the chat room, as I'm sure you guys can see, talking about human instincts and evolution. And I actually had the opportunity to talk with a customer today about evolution. And one of the problems with evolution, I personally don't have a problem with evolution, depending on what you mean when you say evolution. I think that God was big enough and wise enough that he created everything, and he created it in such a way that it could, that could adapt to varying changes in the Earth's climate. Everything is constantly in change. That is the one constant in life, is change. So to think that God would be so limited that he would design and create a universe that would be static and unchanging, it's kind of foolhardy. I don't, however, ascribe to the idea of evolution, that we evolved from apes or slime or fish that at one point in time were able to walk out of the water and become mammals. And one of the problems that the evolutionary scientists have is the definition of a single word, which is the foundation of all evolutionary theory. And that one word is species. Science cannot agree on what a species is or what quantifies a species. And because of that, their entire theory is on shaky ground. I would say that what the scientists are doing is simply observing changes within animals that are built in by the creator, by the designer, so that they can adapt and survive in an ever-changing world. That's just my two cents worth, in my opinion, of course. And I'm going to bring Robert back on, although I must admit I'm enjoying the static-free airtime. But we're going to bring Mr. Robert back on. Sorry about that, Robert.
Evolution.
When I mute your mic, all the static is gone. So I don't know if it's on my end or not.
Can I explain something to you, Ron?
Yes, you certainly may.
When we're online, when we're doing our online lectures, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay, we're online, and the professor, we have microphones plugged into our computer. And once you plug something in, your like a Skype, for instance, there, you know, my professor can be on Skype sometimes, and that makes the same exact noise what we've been hearing on the, you know, on the show, the same that
right.
Room, it's the same. I was just outside trying to get my dog in. I said, that's the same noise that it sounds like on our lectures. And I think that may be the problem.
Well, I'm certainly not trying to blame you, but...
No,
More convenient for me to put the fault on you than it is myself.
I understand that. But I'm just telling you, it's the same noise that is that occurs when I'm listening to my professor trying to drum all this stuff into my brain, and right now I'm fried. I can't.
Now let me ask you a question. We're going to do a statistical analysis of this. when you're listening to your professor, you're presumably using the same phone system that you're currently using right now.
Right.
That explains it.
I think I have to get rid of Verizon, period. I need to disconnect my whole phone, because all my phones are the same way. Maybe it's my phone line. Maybe there is a bad connection. I don't know, somewhere.
I still think that either the ADL or the FBI has wiretapped your phones, and they're keeping tabs on you.
Well, you know, that's possible, because they called me up and did a survey, and the first question they asked me was, do you work for a radio station? Now, why would they ask me that, Rob?
Well, maybe they thought you were, an announcer or something. I don't know.
My gosh. I always thought my phone was tapped, but I wasn't quite sure.
They're just keeping tabs on you, man.
I caused a lot of problems in Sarasota County. I stirred a lot of stuff up.
You're a bad apple, Robert.
Well, I think it was Bill Strong. I was talking to him about Vern Buchanan, our congressman. And when I was going to run for Congress, my platform would have just been, I said to Bill, he voted identical with Harry Reid all the way through. If you look at Harry Reid's record, Ron, and if you look at Congressman Vern Buchanan's record, it's almost identical.
I think there was a, and I'll paraphrase the saying, that when you're a young man, you're a liberal. But as you get older and wiser, you become a conservative. But I have to think that we need to add a third category. When you become old enough to be dependent, you revert back to being a liberal.
That's right. You're absolutely 100% correct.
And the area that you live in, down in Florida, I mean, my God, those people have to be completely confused. To be a senior citizen, dependent on Social Security, and a conservative, I mean, that's got to be like the ultimate battle of good and evil within yourself every day when you get up and look in the mirror.
God. I mean,
I honestly don't know how people do it. And I know we've got several family members on Patriot Families that have disabilities that are on Social Security. And I'm not saying this in a derogatory manner. I love them, and I think they're great. And I used to make the comment that the Patriot Families is much like the Island of Misfit Toys, in the old Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer cartoon. Because we have this enigma, this, like, it's a rip in the space-time continuum, where we have a whole slew of people that, for all intents and purposes, ought to be voting Democrat.
Yeah.
But they're not. And that just, to me, says that, you know what, they have morals. They have a foundational standard. They haven't fallen into line.
No.
They're not just going to go along to get along.
No.
They know what's right and wrong. And I wish there were more people like them out there in the world. And I think that's what makes our Patriot Family group such a strong group.
Well, I wish there was more members that thought like us. I mean, they are. They just don't know about us. I mean, I mean, when I was talking to my friends, my friend Scott in Atlanta, it was just, his story is the same as exactly as my story. He went through, and he didn't get accepted to PhD school because he didn't. He says, why do you want to become a doctor in psychology? And he gave the wrong answer. And his answer was, it's because I want to use psychology for my business one day. Well, this guy graduated with honors from the University of Georgia. And, well, they denied him. He had a 4.0. He had a high GRE. He had all the qualifications, but he said the wrong thing. Now, the answer that they want to hear is, why do you want to become a PhD in psychology? It's so I continue, can continue to do research and become an adjunct professor one day. That's the answer they want to hear.
And that's just utterly ridiculous.
You know? I mean, now, if that's not... If that's not indoctrination in and of itself, what is? Right?
Well, absolutely. But, and I'm afraid you're probably right. I know you're not exaggerating.
That's my interpretation of it.
I've always looked at psychology and from a very early age. I've always looked at psychology as a pseudoscience. And I don't think that when you're looking at large groups of people, I think there's application. It's applicable, and there is some very sound science behind it. But when you begin to get to the individual level and you're trying to establish a normal, if you will, I don't think you can do that. I don't think it's possible.
But when you're running all these tests, like I have been doing...
You run all the tests... The reason they run all the tests is so that they can run them through a statistical model.
Exactly.
As you already know.
And the moral of the story of each test is it has to be approximately normal.
Right. And the problem is define normal. This is something that I went through as a young man talking to a psychiatrist. And... they're always, I found them to be condescending, first of all. And I'm sitting here and I'm looking at this guy and I'm probably doing to him exactly what he's doing to me, this psychoanalysis. I'm trying to figure out what's your angle and what are you driving at. And he's trying to find out the same thing from me. Yeah, I was in a very difficult time as a young man. I was very confused and didn't understand why things were the way they were in the world. And that's just life, There's no guarantees in anything. And we all suffer from a terminal illness. We all have a terminal illness, and it's called life. And so every time this guy would try to push and probe for... And I knew what he wanted. I knew the answers that he was looking for, and I would laugh at him. I'd start laughing. I honest to God, I would. I'm like, do you think I'm this damn shallow that I can't see where you're trying to lead me? So I would laugh. And so then he began to ask me why I was laughing. Well, every time I ask you a question, your response is you laugh. I said, well, what would you prefer my response be? To leap out of the chair and beat the hell out of you? But would that be more appropriate? Do you want me to be angry? Do you want me to be sad? What is it? What's the response you're looking for, doctor? And I'm sure I can conjure that up, given a moment or two to collect myself. He didn't like that.
Of course not.
He didn't like that at all.
They don't like it when you become smarter than they do. They don't.
I was all of 13 years old, but I'm looking at this guy and I'm like, to me, who in the hell do you think you are that you believe you can ask me a few leading questions here and there, and then you can come back and assimilate a report that basically explains who I am and what my deficiencies are mentally, or what you perceive my mental deficiencies to be. And then on top of that, you're going to determine what medication would best bring me into the normalcy bias. Screw you. I'm not into your medication. I'm not playing your game. And I think you're an idiot. And you're on a fool's errand if you think that you know what's going on in the mind of any other human being.
Oh, man. Don't I know.
Most people don't even understand what the thoughts that run through their mind themselves. That's called life,
We have our the so-called middle class. Basically, now, Ron, we got our who dealt our hand? Did God deal our hand, or did the government deal our hand? That's what I want to know.
Dealt our own hand. Well, we dealt our own hand. Quite honestly, and I think that's the thing that all these people are in denial about, if you want to get into the psychological end of it. We're in denial, and mankind, humanity, from what I can read throughout history, has been in denial of their own responsibility for their own damn actions for a very, very long time. People don't want to be accountable.
They don't want to be accountable for their own debt.
Right. I did it to myself, and now I'm mad. So I'm going to blame everybody else because it couldn't be me, because I would never do such a thing. And it's that justification that people always try and justify their actions, even when they know they're dead wrong. They still go out of their way to try and justify them. And if they find one other person to agree with them, well, then, golly, there you go. See, I was right all along. And they feel justified, and everything's okay. Even as society and the world that is crashing down around their ears, they're sitting around singing Kumbaya, and it's all normal. It's all good. This is, you got one portion of society that says, well, it's God's will, and we can't fight God's will. No, it's not his will. Pick up the damn Bible and read it. What does he tell you in there? He says, I didn't give you to a spirit of bondage. I didn't create you to be a slave. I created you to be your own independent, walking, talking, thinking, sentient being. And here you are bowing down and licking the feet of someone who's no better than you are, but you've made this individual your master. You have completely just surrendered yourself. All of your individuality, all of your individual self and your rights, you've just surrendered them over without so much as a whimper. That's not God created man to be.
I'm just totally amazed. I'm just amazed. And I'm amazed at these people who did it to themselves.
And they won't admit it.
Exactly.
They will not admit that they've done it to themselves, and they will not admit that all, it's like a prison of glass. And all they have to do is break the window and walk away. But they don't even see the window.
No.
Because it's clear. So they know it's there, but they pretend that it doesn't exist. And then in the end, they are not the ones to blame. It's not their fault. It's not their fault. It's someone else's fault. And
it's my fault.
I think this is Mr. Michael Magic. Well, you are Jewish, Robert. So,
oh, my God.
I think you share. You have a lion's share of the blame. That's another society.
Oh, that's, yeah, well.
But, I mean, we've talked about that.
I'm a marked man.
Yeah, and that's the lunacy. Everybody's looking for someone to blame but themselves.
See, but my new friend, she gets it, man. She's got so much common sense. It's just unbelievable. She understands. She knows what's going on.
One of the things that I get upset with, and people get upset with me when we have the conversation, and Michael, you're on. Your mic is open, so we're going to bring you in just a second. But one of the things that you look throughout time and history is that you see people, they want to blame the Jews for killing Christ.
Right.
And there's a problem with that. And the problem with that is that if we blame this one group of people here, the Hebrews, Israel, the Jews, whatever we want to call them, whatever name we want to put on them, but we're going to blame them. See, then what that does is that removes our own guilt, and it ignores our own sin that was as much a part of the coming of Christ as was the Jews, the chosen, turning against God's will and his command. And, well, for that matter, as much as the Romans. They weren't keeping God's rules either. Huh. It's everyone's fault, and it comes down to an individual basis. It's not a collective thing, and that's where the socialists and the Marxists and the idiots go off track, is they try to make it collective. It's not collective. It's one by one.
Before you bring Michael on real quick, I had a Jewish guy knock on my door Friday, right? And guess who he belongs with? I give you one guess.
The Methodist. I don't know.
Jehovah Witness.
Oh, Lord.
I said, now why would a Jew turn into a Jehovah Witness? He said, I need to talk to you. I said, I'd like to hear your story. I really would. let Michael come on.
Is this the show where a person can call up and blame the Jewish guy?
It is.
Go ahead, Michael.
It is, and we, by happenstance, we've got a Jewish guy on the phone. And Michael, just so that you know, if you don't want to blame the Jewish guy, we can blame the Roman Catholic Church and the Spanish conquistadors. Robert is half Spanish. So.
Oh, man, you got the best of both worlds.
Yeah, exactly.
Really?
I mean,
wow.
I mean, yeah, dude, we can do the Inquisition right here. Not a problem.
Michael, wow. What's on your mind, Master Michael?
Well, you know, I hate to jump into a show and change the topic, but, you know, let's do it anyway, okay? I've been looking more and more just over the last couple of days about, you know, everybody takes the mark of the beast. Everybody seems to that sentence, you know, for granted, you know, they just kind of, you know, it comes and goes. It's like the wind, okay? But, you know, they don't realize that, you know, 98% of the items that they purchase are being done so with a code, a mark of the beast in reality. No? Yes?
Well, okay. Let me take both sides of this argument, if I may. There is an argument that, of course, everything is, as you said, with a code. And if I remember correctly, and it's been 10 years probably since I read about this, but everything is run through a computer system in Basel, Switzerland, that takes up several stories of a large building. And the computer is nicknamed the Beast. Now, that's one of the conspiracy theories that I've run across. Now, my personal opinion, my personal viewpoint, being a preterist, I believe, as Douglas Wilson said in his debate with Christopher Hitchens, that the beast spoken of in Revelation was Nero. Nero was the beast. And, you know, it talks about the Antichrist and the seven heads. Okay, and Rome was known as the city of the seven hills. And Wilson goes through very eloquently the seven Caesars that existed, ending with Nero. And now we've got to remember that Nero committed suicide. He cut his own throat. So when Nero committed suicide, the Roman Empire fell into chaos. It was without a head. That's the fatal head wound that was healed. It was healed by the rise of a general named Vespasian. And Vespasian came along and took control of Rome and became the Caesar. And it was under Vespasian that Jerusalem was destroyed and Judea was destroyed, fulfilling the prophecy that Christ spoke of in the Olivet Discourse to his disciples when they asked him, how will we know, when will these things happen? And he told them, truly this generation shall not pass. They could not have believed that he was talking about a generation 2,000 plus years in the future. He was speaking directly to them, and it happened in 70 AD with the destruction of Jerusalem, where the temple was destroyed and the foundation plowed up, where not one stone lay upon another. And that was the end of an age, and the age was the age of Judaism and the house of Israel in the Holy Land. It was the end of the original covenant that was represented by the tearing of the veil. That was the tearing of the contract. God had suffered through many violations of that first covenant, time and time again. The last time was when the Israelites were sent into captivity into Babylon for 70 years. Okay, and the final straw was the rejection of Christ. Now, it looks like we've got Miss Linda coming on as well. Or this could be David. Yes, sir.
I don't want to jump in the middle of somebody here. The only reason I brought that up, okay, is, you know, I understand, you know, the convenience of it all. As far as the barcodes and stuff, you know, it can also look at it, though, and I'm not saying good or bad, yes or no, really. I just wanted other people's opinions, okay?
But right.
It could be a way that Satan is using to get people accustomed to what is to, you know, fulfill prophecy in the future here.
Well, I have expressed my opinion on that previously. As far as the database and what's going on with the database and the barcodes and all this, I don't see it as a good thing. No. So let me state that right out of the box. As far as it being a fulfillment of prophecy, I don't believe it is. However, I do think that that ideology is being used and fostered to encourage people to believe that, which is another reason that I think that they used the creation of the nation state of Israel and why they were instrumental, our government and others, instrumental in using Islam as a tool. Because this, all of this taken together gives the appearance of the fulfillment of prophecy. And 760, you're on the air.
Preach on, my radio hubby. Hello. Hello, Michael.
Hey, Linda.
Linda.
Okay. I'm doing a little bit of on-the-spot reporting because I've been on my feet for about 5 hours. We did a fundraiser here in Oceanside for the Action Committee to defeat the evil ones of the City Council. So it's been pretty good. We didn't make as much money as we wanted to, but at least we got some. So, yeah, it's very bizarre when you talk about prophecies, and it's something we all need to study. But I'm going to get a link from Linda, because Linda W., she's a wonderful person. She's trying to figure out what's going on as well. And she said that they've already built underground railroads with boxcars and shackles. So take note, people. It's not good. She's going to send me all the information. I haven't confirmed it, but I'll do some research on it. So, not good.
Now,
these guys are evil.
Look, I've seen some of the pictures of the boxcars and the shackles and so on.
Oh, my God.
Look, you got to be careful, okay? Because some of this stuff is just hyperbole.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we have so much information available that it clouds the truth. It becomes difficult to discern what's true and what's not.
Right.
And, you know, this is why I wrote the blog some time back, Preterist versus Futurist, and why it matters. And I don't know if anyone has read that blog or not, but if you haven't, I would encourage you to go to the Patriot Family's website and look up that blog and read it. Sometimes, and this is something that, you know, I never know when this happened, when it's going to happen or when it's not going to happen. Sometimes I am able to put down in writing my thought in a more cohesive fashion than I am speaking them. Usually
right.
That doesn't happen. Usually I can talk much better than I can write. I don't know. It's just the way it works.
But, you know, I think when you put that out there, I think I did read it. I'll have to go back and read it again.
And you know, one of the unfortunate things in when we start talking about this, and especially when it comes to biblical prophecy is one of those things that's been the single most hotly debated topic within theology since the time of Christ. Okay, everybody thinks they've got an inside track on. They know the deal and nobody else does. And I get that. I get that completely. And the idea is not to challenge anyone's belief in Christ or faith. Not at all. The idea is to have an open enough mind to read the scripture for what it says. And it can be difficult, I understand, because some things are literal, and some things are meant as a parable. And it can be difficult to discern between the two. One of the things that I think a lot of Christians don't realize, and the naysayers and the atheists and the progressives, they all try to push the age-old idea that all of the books of the Bible were written long after the time of Christ. You know, the earliest one I think I've heard on television that they'll give credit for is 30 years after the death of Christ, which is patently false, and it's absolutely scientifically demonstrably false, because they did find the Dead Sea Scrolls. Many of the Dead Sea Scrolls actually contain the same writings, not all of them. There, and we also have the Gnostic Gospels. But one that was of major importance was the book of Revelation that was written by John on the Isle of Patmos.
Right.
And they know for a scientific certainty that the book of Revelation was written no later than 68 AD.
Wow.
And the reason that date is so instrumental and so important is that the destruction of Jerusalem and Judea had not occurred at that time. But it was at hand. It was very near.
Right.
And there was a lot of suffering that was going on in Judea and Jerusalem, but particularly in Jerusalem at the hands of the Romans. They were under siege. And it was in that transitionary period between the time that Nero committed suicide and the time that Vespasian rose to power that there was this tumultuous time. and it was during that time that John wrote Revelation, or at least it's presumed that it was during that time. Robert, are you okay? He's doing yoga now.
No, I was trying to find something, and I can't find it.
He's either doing yoga or sniffing glue. I'm not much sure.
I was doing the new stuff. I was experimenting with the hand sanitizer.
I refuse to use that stuff.
You know, that's dangerous stuff.
The hand sanitizer, it is. You know, I hear the kids are drinking that stuff.
I know.
On the internet.
I can't find my other phone. I think that might be the problem.
You got three?
No, I have two mobiles, and I've been looking for the mobile phone all day long. I had it in my bedroom and it's gone, and it's just like it just disappeared. I don't know where it is.
Well, disconnect the other phone and run next door and use your neighbors and call yourself.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes,
you know, Ron? You know what? Can I try my cell phone instead? I want to hang up this phone, and I'm going to call you back. Okay. I want to call you back on my cell.
Okay.
All right.
Robert.
Bye.
Alrighty. Yes, Miss Linda.
Okay. I don't know. I'm trying to get Miss Linda Walsh off for you because she was the one that told me about what she saw. So here we go. Okay. Hi, Ron.
Hi, Linda. This must be Linda, too.
Yeah, yes. With Linda and Linda. That's a coincidence.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
Linda 1 and Linda 2.
Yep. Linda wanted me to tell you my son and his friends brought some stuff to my attention recently that they had seen not only on television, and I think it was on the program Conspiracy Theories with Jesse Ventura, and also on the internet. They were showing me video links.
Right.
About the underground railroads that are alleged to run from the Denver airport across the center of the country.
The Denver airport.
Right.
Yes.
Do you know about that?
I do, actually. And, you know, it's I was telling Linda, you know, unfortunately, because all of the information that's available, it becomes difficult to determine what's true and what's not.
Right.
But
I can
tell you this. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you go.
Well, I was going to say, I can tell you this. Before I was awake, we had taken a trip out to Colorado. My wife's mother had passed away. And we'd gone out and we drove back. And then we went back a few years later for a family reunion. And we flew into the new airport outside of Denver. So we didn't go into Stapleton, which was the airport that the primary before the new one was built.
Right.
And I was really taken back by all the murals that were painted on the wall.
Yes, with the quasi-Nazi people with the guns pointed at children and coffins and things like that.
It
yeah,
is,
that's some mural,
bizarre.
Isn't it?
It is bizarre. And it's not just
well,
one.
Well, it's beyond
mural.
Bizarre. The worst part
several.
Is the plaque that's in the floor that says New World Airport Commission.
Yes, and the little plaque in the hallway from the Freemasons, you know, dedicating the terminal and everything. Yeah, no,
yeah.
I was there. I saw it.
According to the kids, younger people are telling me that there were actual construction workers interviewed that were involved in the construction of the railroads, and they were reporting back that the rail cars all have shackles at every seat. Now, who are they planning to shackle to the floors, and where are they being transported exactly?
Well, and I'll tell you, nothing surprises me anymore. And
yeah.
I have been privileged, I guess, that I saw the Denver airport with my own eyes. My wife and I later moved to Georgia, and we took our children for a trip, a family vacation, the first one we'd ever had. We went to Jekyll Island.
Oh.
And we rented a duplex on Jekyll Island. We stayed there for a week. And one of the things we did was did a little bicycle tour of the island. And we went to the Jekyll Island Club. And I have seen the door. As the brass plaque that says behind this door, the Federal Reserve System was born. And I didn't think two seconds about it when I saw it at the time. It meant nothing to me. I was like, wow, that's really cool. And now I also know that in Elberton, Georgia, is the Georgia Guidestones.
That's right. Yep. There you go.
So
yeah,
at some point you start going, okay.
The thing that concerns me about the railroads also is this past summer, if anybody was paying attention, there were videos and news reports all over YouTube about the fact that the federal government was herding the wild Mustangs off the middle of the country and actually running them off cliffs with helicopters. So what's about? I mean,
there was a report also, if you remember, that there was an earthquake in D.C., in the D.C. area.
Right.
Now, there were some reports out that earthquake was not an earthquake, but it was some of the good guys who had managed to detonate some kind of explosive device underground in one of the rail tunnels. So, I hear what you're saying, and I think the hour is very late, unfortunately.
I agree.
I'm very
concerned for myself and for my child, because he has to live here after I'm gone.
I worry about my children and my grandchildren. And
yeah.
I don't want to see the culmination of what these plans are for my family.
No, I know. Do you know about the new, what is it when they sign a presidential order that's it's an executive order, that's it.
Right.
Do you know about the new one where you're not allowed to speak in the presence of a Secret Service officer?
Oh, no. That actually is not that. Not an executive order. That started out as H.R. 347.
So that is actually a House bill.
It is law. It is law, and there were only three members of our government who voted against it. Three.
Oh, Lord.
And Ron Paul, one of them, thank God. And the reason, and I'll tell you what I think the crux is behind that law. There's two things that are coming up that are very fundamental. One, up in Chicago, they're going to have the NATO summit.
When does that happen?
That's happening in May, I believe, coming up next month, as a matter of fact, yes. And the other thing is going to be the Republican National Convention. And the reason I mentioned the Republican National Convention, having been active in the Campaign for Liberty with Ron Paul, I was fortunate enough to be elected a delegate in my county, and I went to our district convention. In that process, there was a guy that got thrown out of our county convention. There was a newspaper article written up about Ron Paul and this movement to, quote-unquote, disrupt the process by Ron Paul supporters, right? We're going in and advocating to be elected as delegates, and we're disrupting the process, while those people that were supporters of Rick Santorum or Mitt Romney or Newt Gingrich, well, they were just taking part of the process. We, however, were disrupting it. And the language in that H.R. 347 is very clear that anyone that is in a restricted area or a restricted use building, and those areas and buildings are defined as anywhere where the president or the vice president or anyone who is eligible for Secret Service protection and has not declined it is currently residing or is going to be speaking in the future, that is going to be a restricted area.
So it's effectively silencing anybody that may want to speak out in a public forum.
Correct. Correct. It silences dissent, and it goes on to say anyone that seeks to disrupt the process.
Wow.
Okay.
These
and
people
so,
are scaring me to death.
Exactly.
I don't like
and
this.
I'm sitting here going, you know, and I see this, these news articles from all over the country, how people who are going and voicing their support for Ron Paul are disrupting the process. And then I see this bill come out saying that if you're in an area, and they made sure to include not only the president, the vice president, but they made sure to include in the language any major presidential candidate. Now, they don't define major, but I'm sure Mitt Romney would fit their definition. So, you know, there's some bad things coming our way, I do believe, in the very near future.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm going to hand you back to Linda Phil. She's got something she wants to say, I think.
Okay, Linda. Thanks, it was nice having
anyway,
you.
Anyway, yeah, what happened at the very top, I know you're running out of time, of our thing, they played the national anthem, and the lady you just talked to was absolutely at the end of it in tears because she knows that we're almost done. And you know, it's sad. It really broke my heart when I saw her crying at the end of the anthem.
Well, you know, and to kind of segue back to the very beginning of the show, and I was talking about the video clip that I put up yesterday, Collision, the movie.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you got a chance to watch it.
Not yet.
But in that, it's a documentary, and it's a debate between an atheist and an apologist.
Right.
And towards the end, they get to talking about America. And Hitchens, who is the atheist or anti-theist, as he likes to call it, he's deceased now. He says they were discussing Lincoln, and they were in the nation's capital. And Hitchens said something about Lincoln and talking about our nation. And Wilson immediately corrected him. And he said, well, see, that's where Lincoln went wrong, and that's where a lot of the progressives go wrong, because
right.
you go and read the Federalist Papers and read the minutes of our Constitutional Convention, the founders were adamant that we're not a nation. We are not
right.
a nation. It's
we're
not
a
nation. It's not a nation. It is a union of independent states,
right.
not a nation, not a national government. No, no, no,
right.
no, no.
I know.
And,
I get
you. You know, yeah, it's instrumental. Again, it goes back to being independent and being individuals and being responsible. Yes, and being responsible for our individual actions, not only responsible to one another as a society, but ultimately responsible to God, the Father.
Okay. Well, you
that's
know,
the ultimate responsibility.
Right. When I look up the word sovereignty, it not only describes an individual, it describes the state, like California, New York, whatever. Those are sovereigns. And this nation or country or, you know, this body that we have with our borders is also supposed to be sovereign from outside influence and rule. That's what it's all about. They were adamant. They didn't want King George or King anybody coming, you know, from any other little podunk place and giving us, you know, Hades over stuff. It's ridiculous.
Well,
nobody understands the wording anymore.
Well, here's the thing, and I think this is probably the easiest way to sum it up. And again, exactly why the progressives, Marxists, socialists, communists, whatever ists or isms you want to put on it,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. want to reject God, okay?
Yep.
And that is that it is a natural consequence of the order of things that
right.
the thing that is created can never become greater or superior to its creator.
Exactly.
Okay,
yeah.
So God is the creator of all. Man creates the state. The state is
yep.
not superior to man. Man is the sovereign on two
right.
feet on this earth. In as far as we can have sovereignty, the true sovereign,
right.
the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords,
mm-hmm.
is God,
yep.
not man.
True. We are his sheep, and he is the good shepherd. And if people would wrap their heads around that, it's, you know, who else do you need to follow? You have to follow him. I mean, otherwise it's just death, destruction, chaos, ruin, and Stalin. I mean, that's what happens.
Well, and that's exactly the point. And, you know, in that debate, Kitchens puts forth a scenario that there's a woman laying on the sidewalk, and a man comes up and begins kicking her in the stomach.
Ooh.
He says, no one here would have any other reaction to that than revulsion and anger, because you know it's not right.
Mm-hmm.
He says, now suppose she's pregnant.
Oh, my Lord.
He said, there's outrage. Everyone, he said, that's outrageous. It's disgusting. And I thought it was awesome. Wilson looked at him and he says, well, the universe wouldn't care. And atheists don't care. He said, because if you did care, he said, the woman can go right down the street to the doctor and have her child killed, and it's perfectly legal, and I have to pay for it, and the government funds it. He was silent.
But, you know, when you talk about something is not the right to do, this is the preachings of Jesus. I mean, everything I've heard from pastors around the world, you know, if you look at what they call the character of God, is he is perfect, and we are supposed to try to strive to not to be perfect. We know we can't be that, but we can try to do the right thing. And so if you try to keep a commandment, you don't do it because you don't want to get caught. It's because it's not the right thing to do. And
right.
That's the character of God. So you have to get in line with that.
Exactly. And, you know, I think the biggest thing for me that comes across throughout that documentary is that the atheist argument, and this is where Cy was so fantastic when I had him on my show,
cool.
is that the atheists argue a double-sided argument. They argue, I don't believe in God. There's no such thing in God. No thinking person could believe in such a fairy tale. But if you do, everything's his fault because he created evil and all this other stuff. So why would you believe in such a thing?
Oh, my Lord.
And they completely miss. See, either way they go, either way.
Uh-huh.
If you go with believing God, it's all God's fault. If you go with believing there is no God, then, you know, it's just happenstance. But the one constant in both of those arguments is it removes the accountability of the individual for his own damned actions.
You got it. And that's
it's never my
teaching.
Fault. It's always someone else's fault.
Sounds like Hitler's statements, and of course, for the last 3 years, Obama's statements. It's somebody else's fault.
Right. It's always somebody. It's Bush's fault, for God's sakes. You know, it's always someone else's fault. And
absolutely.
I mean, we all know people that are like that. It's never
yep.
their fault.
Oh yeah.
They've never done a thing wrong. It's always been because someone else influenced them, or they had no
yeah.
choice, or what, you know, whatever.
It's like the 5-year-old mentality of, I don't know how that chair got broken. that's the kind of logic you're dealing with. It's nuts.
Well, the first instinct is to lie. Then the second instinct is to justify or rationalize. And then the third is it right? Well, that's exactly what they're doing. That's exactly what we're talking about. Point the finger of blame at someone else. That's nothing more than trying to justify or rationalize your actions. That's why they wanted a king. That's why they told God, you know, give us a king. So why do you want a king? Because they didn't want to be responsible for themselves. They didn't want to answer
right.
directly to God. Give us a
yep.
king. That way he'll give us permission to do things that are wrong. And then when it goes bad, we'll blame him.
Lovely.
That's exactly what they were doing.
That's so liberal. That's just so progressive of them. Oh, Lord. I know you're out of time, and thanks for taking my call, and it's just been a long day, and I'm going to go home and just die. But
Well, we hope you don't do that, but.
I mean, you know, just physically. God bless everyone here. Thank you so much. Good night, love. Bye-bye.
God bless, Linda. Thanks for calling in, honey. Bye-bye. Robert, any parting thoughts, sir?
Wow. That explains it.
I know I've been giving you those rabbit punches all night, so.
No, what I want to know is what, to reiterate what Linda said. She wanted to know what the boxcars are used for. I guess the boxcars are used for the middle class. They're just going to put us all in and then have the global elite left to the poor, and that's it.
You know, I'm not so sure about that. I mean, if you think about this logically, Robert, those that are on the dole, to use a euphemism, they've already demonstrated that they're not willing to work, but they're willing to take the handout.
Right.
The middle class, however, we have demonstrated beyond the pale that we are willing to suffer the insufferable and still get up and go to work every damn day just to survive, no matter how onerous the burden is that's placed on us. I don't think that the middle class are the ones they want to kill.
I don't know. It sure seems like it, because I'm telling you what, Mr. Ron, I'm taking a beating. I'm just taking a beating.
I think the middle class, they just want to break you.
Yeah.
I think they want to break the middle class, but I think they want to get rid of the useless eaters. All those people that believe that they're benefiting and that, you know, the government has their best interest in mind and they're benevolent, look at history. Look at what happened in Germany and look at what happened in Russia. Who were they killing? The infirm? The useless eaters.
Russia owns us now, and so does China, and so does, what's the other one? I can't even remember anymore. I mean, but the only thing we have to hope for, if the president of France doesn't get reelected, that's a good sign. That's what I'm hoping.
I don't see that as a good sign. If Ron Paul gets elected, I see that as a sign that our country has woken up. If they
That's
elect Mitt
too.
Romney, I see that as a continuation of the status quo.
True.
In fact, I think that's part of the agenda or the plan. I mean, I told you guys on my show, a month ago, Obama's out. They're pissed at him. That whole Keystone deal, they're pissed. And since then, you've seen story after story come out where his fundraisers were pulling out, the wheels coming off the wagon. Now you've got this Secret Service scandal. And you're going to see more. You're going to see more. There's going to be more bad stories come out about Obama. I'm telling you. They want Mitt Romney in there. They're done with Obama.
I mean,
just my 2 cents worth for all it's worth, you know, probably about a half a cent, but that's my opinion.
No, don't sell yourself short.
Well, guys, we got 90 seconds left. Robert, I want to thank you for calling in.
You're welcome.
Tomorrow night, 7:30 Eastern time, right here, the Constitution Hour with yours truly. Tuesday night, 7 p.m. Eastern time, we'll have Mr. Bill Strong and Hollis Buchanan for Patriot Families Chat. Wednesday night, we'll have our very own lovely and talented Miss Linda Sills with Right from the Left Coast. Then on Thursday night, the always informational and very educational Miss Terry Rowland with Patriot Education. And on Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we'll have Brian with Mortgage Help. And on Friday night, our very own talented and always entertaining Mr. Michael Magic with Exposing the Illusion. And then again, we'll be back to Sunday and Fed Up Frank right here at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If you're not a member of Patriot Families, stop by and join us. That's patriotfamilieswithays.com. God bless everybody. Robert, thank you for calling in. Miss Linda, one and two, thank you both for calling in. Mr. Michael, thanks for calling in and being a part of the show. God bless everybody and good night.
Good night. Thank you, Mike. I mean, you know,